Good afternoon, or depending where you are, good morning, everybody. We'll start. I'm Tony Neske from the EPA. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Mike Boyd of EPA's Radiation Protection Division will give us a presentation on the Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, ANPR for short, for EPA's Environmental Protection Standards for Nuclear Power Operations. Michael will discuss why we're asking if a radiation protection standard should or should not be expressed in terms of risk instead of dose. Now, it's important to remember that EPA is not proposing any changes to the standards at this time. We're issuing an ANPR to solicit public information and collect information early as we evaluate whether the standards need to be changed. We're giving this presentation to provide information to help you submit comments. This webinar itself is not a means of submitting comments. Comments have to be submitted in writing and are due on June 4th. Next slide. So just a little protocol here. We have a lot of people on the line today. We're going to keep the phones on mute so that everybody can hear without distractions. Mike and other EPA staff members will answer questions at the end of the presentation. We'll ask you to submit questions in writing. For those of you participating via the chat room website, please type your questions in the chat room at the side, left side of the page. For those of you participating by telephone only, please email your questions to me at Neske, N-E-S-K-Y, dot Tony, T-O-N-Y, at EPA.gov. And even though we're answering questions at the end of the presentation, please feel free to enter them throughout the webinar. We only ask that any questions or remarks entered in the chat room be pertinent to the specific environmental regulations that we're discussing today, and that they be courteous. We won't allow any entries that use inappropriate language, that endorse particular services or products. So with that, let me turn it over to Mike, whose technical presentation will be beginning on slide number 3.
Thanks, Tony. This webinar is being held as part of the public comment period for the Advance Notice of Proposed Rulemaking for revising the Environmental Radiation Protection Standards for Nuclear Power Operations. The standards are published in Title 40 of the Code of Federal Regulations under Part 190 and are sometimes referred to as 40 CFR 190. My name is Mike Boyd, and I'm a health physicist in EPA's Radiation Protection Division, which is under the Office of Air and Radiation. An ANPR was published in the Federal Register on February 4, 2014, and the public comment period for this ANPR will be open until June 4th of this year. This webinar discusses one issue for which the agency is requesting comment, that being consideration of a risk limit to protect the public at nuclear power operations facilities. In this webinar, we're discussing the issues related to the consideration of a risk limit for protecting the public from radiation. We will not be taking comments today, as Tony said. Comments must be submitted in writing. Our purpose today is to help you prepare comments by discussing some of the issues around the concept of a radionuclide risk limit, and also to give you the chance to hear each other's thoughts and questions. Now we'll move to the next slide. This presentation will cover some background issues regarding the existing standards. Then we'll talk about what is or could be considered a risk limit from a general viewpoint. We'll then talk about what was done in the development of the existing standard and how risk was used in this development. Next, we'll talk about the pros and cons of stating a limit in terms of risk. Then we'll restate the questions that the agency is seeking input on. We'll follow this with a summary of the issue, and finally a discussion of this issue. Next slide. So now we'll dig a little deeper into the requirements of 40 CFR 190. Part 190 contains two main radiation protection provisions. First, there are public dose limits established under 40 CFR 190.10A. that state that no individual member of the public shall receive a radiation dose in excess of 25 millirems per year to the whole body, 75 millirems per year to the thyroid gland, and 25 millirems per year to any other organ. To be clear, these limits are for members of the public and are not applied to radiation workers who are subject to different standards specific to them. These limits were based on recommendations established by the International Commission on Radiological Protection in their publication number 2, which was published back in 1959. Since that time, our understanding of radiation and its effect on our bodies has improved. There's another major provision. The other major provision in the current rule is found at 40 CFR 19010B, where annual release limits are established for the total quantities of radioactivity entering the environment for certain radionuclides on the basis of per gigawatt of electricity produced. These limits are 50,000 curies of krypton-85 per gigawatt of electricity produced in any given year, 5 millicuries of iodine-129 per gigawatt of electricity produced in any year, and 0.5 millicuries combined of plutonium-239 and other alpha emitters with half-lives exceeding a year, again on the basis of per gigawatt of electricity produced in any given year. We need to note that the radionuclide release limits were developed with a focus on reprocessing or processing of spent nuclear fuel. This is because these particular radionuclides are released only during nuclear fission, so this only becomes an issue with the nuclear power generation and reprocessing parts of the fuel cycle. The primary concern is with the reprocessing step, because that's where the fuel cladding would be opened and the radioactive gases and airborne particulates could readily escape. Now we'll go to the next slide. Let's talk a little bit now about what a risk limit is. EPA uses health risk to the public as a primary factor when establishing environmental limits for all its standards. However, it is only one of the factors considered in the establishment of an environmental limit. Other considerations may be technical feasibility, cost, legal mandates, and others. Once these factors are all taken into account, EPA will propose a limit for an environmental contaminant. For protection from radiation, traditionally the limit has been stated in terms of a dose to a member of the public. The limit is often stated in terms of a dose rate, which is the dose received over a period of time. For example, millirems per year or millirems per hour, etc. An alternative way to limit radiation exposure could be to limit radioactivity released from a facility per a unit of time, picocuries per hour, or some other measure quantifying radiation being emitted into the environment. However, in establishing the dose limit, there is a correlation of what the dose limit translates to in terms of the health risk to the public. EPA has previously developed risk-based guidance in cancer risk coefficients for environmental exposure to radionuclides. This is Federal Guidance Report Number 13. This guidance serves as a crosswalk relating doses to individual organs with the associated potential risk of cancer for an average member of the U.S. population exposed to radiation. A risk limit states clearly the regulatory agency's level of protection. An example would be stating that the annual risk of developing cancer, for example, to any member of the public should not exceed, say, some factor times 10 to the minus 4. However, even if a risk standard were developed, it may need translating into a measurable quantity in order to be implemented by regulators and licensees. Now we're moving to slide 7. Oh, I'm sorry. I do apologize. I think I was did not forward the last slide. Is that right?
We can't see the slide number on the screen. We don't know why. Keep going. Sorry.
Well, no, you've put the wrong slide up then.
Oh, all right.
I'm sorry. We are on slide 7. EPA currently limits public exposure to radiation in this standard with a dose limit. Anticipated or routine releases of radionuclides from nuclear fuel cycle facilities represent low-level ionizing radiation exposures to the public. As such, these non-emergency releases represent a potential increased risk of cancer to the public. Once an acceptable level of protection is identified, it may be translated to a release rate, as radionuclide concentrations in specific media or another measurable unit, which can then serve as a regulatory limit expressed over time. Alternatively, site-specific modeling may be employed based on measured releases and confirmatory sampling to calculate a dose or risk for comparison to the regulatory standard. Next slide. So, how might a risk standard be, I'm sorry, why might a risk limit be better? This next slide discusses some of the arguments for why a risk level could be a better limiting metric. The purpose of a standard is to provide a numerical limit which clearly states the levels of public exposure that are unacceptable. For environmental exposure to radiation, the health effect that we are attempting to avoid is excess risk of developing cancer. There are three potential advantages with moving to a risk limit. First, stating the numerical objective as part of the standard provides clarity. Second, and related to the first, the public can more easily comprehend and compare a risk standard to health risks from other sources which they may be more familiar with to assist in making decisions. And lastly, risk represents a judgment which should not change much over time. To illustrate this, I will speak about the DOE standard briefly. In 1959, when environmental protection from radiation standards initially was legislated, a reasonable level of protection was developed, and the corresponding dose was developed as a standard. Over time, as we became more knowledgeable about the effects of radiation on the human body, the risk that corresponds to that dose has changed. In other words, for the same dose, we are now regulating at a different risk level than was initially intended when the rule was developed. However, if the standard were in the form of a risk, then as our understanding of radiation evolves, we can continue to protect the public to the same acceptable level of risk. Next slide. There are some arguments that the agency is aware of which might make moving to a risk standard more problematic. The first reason is that dose is a measurable quantity, while risk is not. However, in showing compliance with the existing dose standard, modeling is almost always used with confirmatory sampling of dose measurements. The second issue is how the risk standard will be translated into DOSE for implementation. The computer models available for calculating risk have assumptions built into them which provide for inconsistency in application across the industry, unless additional guidance is provided by either EPA or the implementing agency, in this case NRC. Next slide. So, as EPA considers the issue of establishing a standard expressed in terms of risk, we believe it to be appropriate to better understand the merits of this approach. The industry currently uses a dose limit, and the agency is seeking information on how the industry would be affected by this change. Consequently, EPA is seeking input on the following questions. Should EPA express its limit for the purpose of this regulation in terms of radiation risk or radiation dose? Should the agency base any risk standard on cancer morbidity or incidence or cancer mortality? What would be the advantages or disadvantages of each? How might implementation of a risk limit be carried out? How might a risk standard affect other federal regulations and guidance? Additionally, EPA would be interested in receiving any available data on what cost may be incurred with changing to a risk standard. Excuse me. And now our next and last slide. In summary, for this consideration of a risk limit webinar, the EPA will be considering whether or not a risk standard is a better metric in its revision to its environmental protection requirements to nuclear power operations, 40 CFR Part 190. That is, should we decide to update these standards. We will accept comments on both the technical aspects of switching to a risk standard, as well as policy issues associated with developing a risk standard. This concludes our presentation in this webinar. Tony, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay. If anyone has any questions, please, if you're on the webinar software, please enter them in the chat room at the left of the page. And if you are just following by phone, you can email me your questions, Nesky, N-E-S-K-Y, dot Tony, T-O-N-Y, at EPA.gov. And we'll give everybody, we see some people typing in questions. We got a question already. Okay. This one by email. How does EPA plan to deal with higher risk to young females compared to standard man? See Beer 7 for comparative incidence of cancer depending on age of dose. depending on age of dose, so therefore risk. You want me to repeat the question?
Yeah.
Okay. How does EPA plan to deal with higher risk to young females compared to standard men? And they say C, B, or 7 for comparative incidence of cancer risk.
Right. Well, EPA currently calculates risk to all ages and both genders, and certainly this information is available to us when we go through the policy steps of setting a proposed standard. So we would certainly be considering the risk to all individuals in the general population when we set our standard.
Okay. We got a question on a calculation. We may have to get back to the individual. I'll read the question. You say that release limits are per gigawatt of energy produced. Generally, as energy is reported as gigawatt hours. How do I know how much can be released by a reactor? Is it 1 gigawatt total per year? That is what is 1,000 megawatts, or is it per gigawatt produced second by second? They're asking for a calculation.
Well, what has to happen is you have to use the total amount of, minutes or seconds or per in a year, and then you've got to calculate the ramp that up and multiply that to get your total amount per gigawatt. So that's, I guess, an example without giving you specifics about what has to be done to that calculation.
Okay. Question. A risk standard for whom? Children? Adults?
Well, I mean, the form of the standard is still under discussion if we were to go with a risk limit, but it would be informed by the risk to all the age groups and both genders.
Yeah, the purpose of this standard is to protect members of the public. Now, this question may, I guess, kind of be directed a little bit towards, how will we actually calculate that, and to what group. Because we have the ability to calculate it to subpopulations or subages. And that's what I think the question is asking. And that's a question that we are actually taking input on in this advanced notice of proposed rulemaking. So we would like your input on that. The agency has not made a clear, definitive policy on how we would take that into account. But these are some of the things that we are considering as we look at how we should, look at either new dosimetry or new science.
All right, one second. Next question would be, the deadline of June 4th for comments will be followed by what?
Well, after we get all the comments in by the deadline, what we'll do is we'll analyze those comments and put out a summary document which talks about what we've heard based upon comments and input from the comment period. There is another question that's out there regarding the deadline. We have received requests to extend this the comment period, and we are taking those into consideration. But after we do put out the summary document, then the agency will determine whether we're going to move forward with revising the ANPR. And if so, then we'll be under the looking at developing a proposal.
Okay. Next question. Can you clarify what quote numerical objective is? Is this the number of cancers?
In what context? I'm sorry. Numerical objective.
Could the person who asked
I think we were just, that was just the example where we were saying how you might state a risk limit, and the risk limit is generally stated in, the number of excess cancers in a population. So the y times 10 to the minus 4 I gave, say that were 1 times 10 to the minus 4, that would mean one excess cancer in 10,000 people exposed to that level of radioactivity or dose. You always incur a radiation dose to get a risk. So when we talk about a risk standard or a dose standard, it's really how we state the protective objective.
Yeah, the way the question sounded was, was assuming that there would be a standard based on a number of cancers as being acceptable, and that's not the way it's done usually. It's usually a risk to an individual rather than number of cancers to a population.
That's right, yes. That was Dr. Jerry Puskin in our Radiation Protection Division.
Okay, next question. What variables might affect risk level? Could numeric limits vary among locations due to difference? And I think let me repeat the question. What variables might affect risk level? Could numeric limits vary among locations due to different variables?
Repeat the question. I'm not sure I understand the question, because the standard, if we publish a standard, that will be the standard you have to meet. If that's
regardless of,
yeah.
Repeat the question for me, please. All right. Once more, the question is, what variables might affect risk levels? Could numeric limits vary among locations due to different variables?
Well, certainly there, the risk will vary as the dose varies, and the dose varies depending on the conditions of the facility and what it's releasing. But it will be up to the facility to institute the controls necessary to meet the standard that we publish.
Please provide the link to the Federal Register to make comments. I'll let them answer questions, and I'll post that in the chat room. And if you look at emails that I've previously sent out, the link to comments will take you right to the right place in the Federal Register. But I'll post that in the chat room before the end of the session today. Next question. Would EPA change the risk model as medical science advances and the chance of death from cancer decreases?
Well, it wouldn't, changing the risk numbers wouldn't matter what's actually happening, whether they increase or decrease. What matters is the science is improving, and yes, we are in fact now updating our radionuclide risk coefficients, and expect within the next 12 to 18 months to have a new version. Well, I guess a initial draft version of revised radionuclide risk coefficients.
Can you read that again? I don't think you're answering the question.
Okay.
I'll
repeat the question, if I may. Would EPA change the risk model as medical science advances and the chances of death from cancer decrease?
Oh, you mean if would we change? Jerry Puskin again.
It depends. If the standard ends up being based on cancer incidence, that wouldn't affect things. If it was based on cancer mortality, it could be updated that way.
Okay. Next question. What measures would or could EPA take to minimize the potential inconsistencies resulting from using the various modeling programs for determining, calculating the risk coefficients?
I could imagine, because this is all speculative, I could imagine that we would have published implementation guidance and acceptable methods. But as with most EPA rules, if the regulated community wanted to propose an alternative way of calculating risk, and it was scientifically defensible, then you know that's always an option.
And I would add to that answer, I would say that, you know, we continually, I guess, communicate with our federal sister federal agencies on ways to, I guess, agree upon, you know, certain, whether it be models or inputs to these models, so that we could better, I guess, show unity to the public. You know, there are going to be some differences that are out there, but we do try, and we do have continuing efforts that go on with the other federal agencies to try to minimize these differences.
Right. I mean, generally, when you're using compliance models to show, you know, to show that you're in compliance with a standard, you can start off with very generic screening models that use extremely conservative parameters, and then as you move into more site-specific data collection, you can refine those estimates. But that's generally, you know, sort of a tiered approach to showing compliance with the standard.
Why just risk of cancers? Why not other health effects?
As of now, our understanding of the biological effects of radiation on the body show that the limiting, the most, you know, the most serious health effects at the lowest levels would be excess cancers. I mean, there are other effects that are known to occur at higher levels, but to be protective of the general population, we want to protect against the effect that is, you know. How would you say that, Jerry?
I think
limiting.
The question would be, particularly cardiovascular effects, let's say. At this point, there's not any real good mechanisms being proposed how low doses of radiation could cause cardiovascular disease. On the other hand, we can't rule it out at this point either, so far as we can tell. A definite threshold hasn't been demonstrated. Whereas with cancer, no threshold's been demonstrated, but there's also good mechanistic reasons for thinking there wouldn't be one. So we, at this point, we think that the cancer risk is much better established, and there's you know, we need to protect the public against radiation-induced cancers. Cardiovascular effects is still an evolving story. The cardiovascular risk, if it does exist at very low doses, would still probably be lower than the cancer risk.
Right. And let me also state this. The Atomic Energy Act limits what we can consider, the regulations that we develop underneath it, to consider, I guess, responses to radiation impacts. So let's say for uranium, which also has a toxicity, which in some cases may be even more harmful than the radiation effects, depending upon what radionuclides you're talking about. We're limited in what we in standards for this regulation to the radiation effects.
Ready?
Okay. Next question. Why does EPA think the general public would better understand limits expressed as risk rather than numeric limits?
Could you repeat it?
To repeat the question, why does EPA think that members of the general public would understand limits expressed as risk better than numeric limits?
Or dose limits.
Right, dose limits.
I think it's, you know, people that are not familiar with radiation physics and the field of radiation protection may not understand dose and how to translate dose into any health effects. So I think that the point simply was that if you state things in number of, you know, expected excess cancers, it's something that they can compare to, you know, other hazards that are regulated.
Next question. To what standards, ICRP 103, 107, et cetera, will 40 CFR Part 90 be updated? I believe that much of the current thinking uses ICRP 30 or ICRP 60 dosimetry.
If the decision is made to move forward with a new rulemaking, we are hoping that the ICRP's implementation guidance for the dosimetry in Publication 103 is available for us to use. And if it is, I think it's, you know, there would be a lot of strong reasons why. But we would appreciate comments on this issue. I mean, we do have the dose coefficients for, you know, the ICRP 60 system, and if in, you know, default would be if ICRP hasn't published new dose coefficients, those would still be the most up to date. But we're keeping our fingers crossed that ICRP will be moving forward. But again, comments would be much appreciated on this topic.
Next question. Tritium releases are not considered. Why not?
You mean from the Part B?
Yeah.
Brian, do you want
to release? Yeah, that question needs a little bit of clarification. Is there a way to ask the commenter to clarify that?
Sure. Could you please give us a little more detail on your question about tritium?
Okay, because the quick answer to that question is that I think that the commenter may be referring to why aren't tritium limits specifically called out as part of 40 CFR 190.10B. And that is correct. Tritium is not pointed out there. But tritium releases must meet the requirements of limiting a dose to the members of the public. That's called out under 40 CFR 190.10A. So tritium is not excluded. It's just adds to the total dose that a receptor in the public may get.
That's right. I mean, the Part B standards really haven't, in practical terms, meant much because we haven't been reprocessing in this country since the standards were issued. And the Part B radionuclides that were listed there were really on the basis of their very long half-lives and their persistence in the, you know, the environment, maybe in the, even in the stratosphere. Tritium has, you know, a much shorter half-life, and it wouldn't be a concern in that regard. Plus, tritium is constantly being produced in, you know, the atmosphere anyway from the cosmic radiation.
Okay. Next question. Are the risks from radiation inclusive of incorporated radionuclides?
Say that again, sorry.
Sure. Are the risks from radiation inclusive of incorporated radionuclides? And I'm guessing that means ingestion. If you're not referring to ingestion, please rephrase your question.
If that's what's meant, we actually do consider ingestion of food, ingestion of water, inhalation, and external exposure. Obviously, so yeah, it is included. Would be included in any standard. All the pathways of exposure and intake.
Thank you. We have a question on the cost calculus. What factors are considered in the 40 CFR 190 cost calculus? Is the December 2000 EPA guidance the controlling guidance?
There's guidance that was developed by the agency how to conduct a cost benefit analysis, and I think that's available on the internet. But I think it was developed in 2010. And that's the most recent guidance. And it is available on the internet, and that's what the agency will be using in lieu of any other guidance that is developed in the meantime. If we were to move to, I guess, analyzing any changes for updating this standard.
Okay. Next question: is the EPA considering creating risk limits for carbon-14 to air and water? release limits.
The agency will consider that. Will consider comments on that issue. That's one of the questions that the agency had asked regarding the radionuclide release limits aspect of the rule, which we did a webinar for separately a few weeks ago. But we consider that if members of the public feel that it's needed. So if you feel that's needed, then please submit that as part of your comments during the comment period.
Okay, we have another question. Is EPA leaning towards a risk-based approach? How does this work when trying to determine the risk of doses below background levels of natural dose? I don't think LNT applies here.
Well, the agency is neither leaning one way or the other on this issue. What we're doing is collecting public input and public comment on this issue before we make a determination on how we would move forward on this. We think that now is the appropriate time to collect comments on this issue because we'd hate to start down the path of a proposal and then get comments saying that, you know, we should consider a risk standard now once we've already gone down the path of spending government money, the public's money, for a certain direction.
All right, and I think that's all our questions. If anyone has any other questions, please type them in now. I had promised you a link to the Federal Register notice, and I made a promise I can't keep. I just checked that link, and it didn't work. I don't know why. I will have to investigate it and get it fixed on our website. So I think that's what triggered the question. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I'll post the address of our website in the chat room and check back, and we'll get a working link to the Federal Register as soon as possible. And I see some people typing. So.
We're just waiting for the comments to be typed in, so bear with us for a little bit.
Okay, here's a question. Has the EPA consulted with the Health Physics Society regarding their position statement on risk perspective versus dose-based standards?
Well, we haven't specifically consulted with them on that issue. I did give a presentation to one of the Health Physics Society local chapters. This was last week. But it wasn't anything. It was a general presentation, the same general presentation that's available to on this that we gave earlier in this webinar series and that we will be giving again in a couple weeks. So nothing specific, but they did get a presentation, a general webinar presentation. And, again, this was the local chapter of the Health Physics Society. So that's what they have received.
But I mean this is Mike Boyd. I'm also active in the HPS and as my professional society, and I do know that the society is aware of the ANPR and is preparing comments. So.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. If anyone has any further questions, please enter them now. I see a new one. Here we go. Here's the next question. Request for clarification of statement, quote, tritium is constantly being produced by cosmic radiation. Is the problem difficulty in measuring tritium? Radon is also natural, but it seems to be evaluated differently.
I mean, that was just a side comment. It really isn't that the fact that the tritium is produced in the atmosphere isn't particularly relevant to the point we're making. It's the point, the answer that that Brian gave is the right one. Is that tritium, the doses from tritium are controlled as are doses from all other radionuclides under the general standard of Part A. So I don't know. Maybe I didn't. Can you read the question one more time to make sure I got all the...
Sure. Request for clarification of the statement, tritium is constantly being produced by cosmic radiation. Is the problem difficulty in measuring tritium? Radon is also natural, but it seems to be evaluated differently.
Yeah, I mean, radon is a decay product of the uranium, radium, in the soil beneath us. What I was talking about is you know, in the upper atmosphere, the high-energy cosmic radiation can actually produce tritium, but
no.
I mean, that's not the tritium that we're regulating or concerned about.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. Any further questions? Again, my email, Nesky, N-E-S-K-Y, tony@epa.gov. All right, I don't see any further activity in the chat room, and I hear people clicking off, so thank you very much for joining us. We're looking forward to getting your comments. We appreciate your interest in this very much, and do check back our website. I will see what's going on with that link to the Federal Register.
Also, there may be some updates to our website, so check it in the next couple weeks. We do have one more webinar that's scheduled. That is in 2 weeks from today. And that's going to be a repeat of the general webinar. But please check our website to get the most up-to-date information regarding the this advanced proposed rulemaking.
Brush off that webcam.